Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma. It is good to be back with you after a two-week vacation. I have so much to share with you, but you're going to have to wait until the end of 2024, or maybe the beginning of 2025, to hear all about it. Anyway, I am back this week with Misty M. Beller. She is here to talk about her book, Healing the Mountain Man's Heart. I don't know if it's even her latest release because she writes so many books, it's hard to keep up with her, but it's a very recent release having come out in August. So she's here to talk to us about that. Before we get into that interview, though, welcome back to my longtime listeners. If you haven't checked out my Patreon, head over to liztolsma.com and find out how you can support the podcast. If you are new here, welcome. I'm so glad to have you along. Please subscribe to Christian Historical Fiction Talk so that you catch all of our episodes. And also check us out on Facebook, X, Instagram, and Pinterest. And that's another great way to keep up with us and to talk about wonderful books. All right, well, let's get right into it. And please help me to welcome Misty M. Beller to the show this week, here talking about her book, Healing the Mountain Man's Heart. Welcome to the show today, Misty. It is so good to have you back with us.
Thank you, Liz. It's such a pleasure, such a pleasure.
Always love getting to talk to you about your books, and you are prolific. I think you've had quite a few out since the last time that you were on here, but it's exciting to talk to you, especially since you have a new book and a brand new series. But before we get to all of that, so why don't you just reintroduce yourself to the listeners?
All right. Well, I am a Christian historical romance author, but my favorite place and time period is the Rocky Mountains in the 1800s. There's just something amazing about mountains in general, but the Rockies especially. They're just so majestic and inspiring, and it's really so hard for me to put into words, but I love that setting. So most of my books are set there, and the time period, my books tend to range from about 1815 on to 1880. 1880 was really the point that civilization hit Montana and the Montana area with gaslighting and the train came and all that good stuff. So I tend to write back before 1880 in really the frontier time period with mountain men and miners and ranchers, just the period that I guess speaks to my heart the most. So this particular book, well, you haven't asked about this book yet.
Well, then why don't you go ahead and tell us? It's The Healing of the Mountain Man's Heart, and it's book one in the Brothers of Sapphire Ranch series. So tell us sort of about the series in general and then about the book in specific.
All right. I am really excited about this book. The series is Brothers of Sapphire Ranch, and the general concept is there's six brothers, the Coulter brothers, who live on a ranch in a very remote mountain in the Montana Territory, kind of near current Missoula. It was Missoula Mills back there, but they were a day's ride away, and they have a secret on their property. Not only do they raise horses and cattle, but they also have a sapphire mine. And this is a real historical fact that I had no idea about until I was trying to figure out a concept for this series. But sapphires absolutely do exist in Montana. There's three basic areas where they've been found. And so I set this story during one of them, in the location of one of them. But it's set back a couple decades before the first sapphires were turned in. So basically what had been happening is all these miners, as they were panning for gold, they were pushing aside all the colored stones that they found because they were looking for the gold color. And those colored stones turned out to be worth quite a bit as well. So in this story, the brothers know what they have. Their father had discovered it back before he passed away. And so they secretly mine the sapphires, and it's kind of set them up for life. But they work very hard not to let people they don't know onto the ranch for several reasons, but to protect the sapphires especially. Because in 1890, when it became public that there were sapphires in Montana, it became kind of another mini rush, like the gold rush. And that's exactly what the brothers did not want to happen. So it's a really fun series. Book one starts with the oldest brother, Jericho, and he's our mountain man hero. He is the protector of the family. Both his parents have passed away, as well as their older sister. And he feels very strongly the loss of their sister because he feels like it was really his fault in letting her leave the ranch and get mixed up with the miner who she ended up marrying and succumbed to illness. And he wasn't a great guy. So anyway, Jericho has a lot of frustration with himself and has determined to really protect the rest of his family. He has his five brothers and then his niece and nephew, the sister's children. And then at the beginning of the book, of course, these two women show up on his property. And one of them says that she is there as a mail order bride for Jericho Coulter. And of course, he's kind of shocked about that because he's Jericho Coulter and he did not send for a mail order bride. So that's the first half of the first chapter. And it becomes a really neat story from there. Dinah is our heroine, and she's the sister who's not planning to be the bride. She's a doctor trained by their grandfather, who's a doctor, but she is a fully trained physician. And she's planning to set up a clinic somewhere nearby where her sister is married and living as a rancher's wife. Anyway, Dinah's a lot of fun. She and Jericho have they're both older siblings and very protective and a little headstrong. So they just have a lot of neat chemistry together.
That sounds like a lot of fun. As an oldest sister, I get the older sibling kind of thing and how that they would be good for each other and the protectiveness of your younger siblings for sure. So that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lots of good things that come from that, but lots of challenges to work through as well, for sure.
This is a mail order bride story, sort of turned on its head, but at its heart, it is a mail order bride story. There are so many of those out there. Why did you decide to write a story like this?
Oh, that's a really good question, and I have an interesting answer. So as I was preparing to start a new series, I knew that I wanted to kind of go back to my first love of my books. The Lady and the Mountain Man is kind of a reader favorite, and it was actually the second book I wrote, and it was the book where I really found my groove with writing, and that I love writing mountain settings and snowy log cabins and remote, just far away from civilization. And so I knew I wanted to do that kind of setting again. But beyond that, I really had no idea. So I did a poll for my readers on my newsletter, and I gave them a number of different ideas that would kind of fit in the time period and the setting that I like to write. So it was all kinds of things from marriage of convenience, wagon train, mail order bride, ranch setting, family saga, trappers, Native Americans. I think I even did orphan train, mm-hmm. just, you know, the whole gamut mm-hmm. of what I could think of that would fit in my brand and my favorite style. And it was amazing, the response. I had almost 3,000 readers respond, and mail order bride was consistently the top answer. You're right, there are so many mail order bride stories out there. But I think there's something about the desperation that would cause someone to respond to a mail order bride advertisement, the desperation that would cause someone to post an advertisement for a wife, that I think is just really compelling in a story. You really get to kind of get a deep dive into someone's motivations pretty early on and pretty easily along with the story. So what I ended up doing was kind of taking the top three or four answers. So mail order bride, ranch, family saga, and mountain man, and kind of combine them all together into the story. So I'm hoping that it's a a story that readers love. I know I have loved writing it. It really, to me, kind of has a little bit of the same feel as The Lady and the Mountain Man did. Definitely a different storyline, different characters, but the same remote ranch setting and snowy log cabin and grumpy mountain man and all those things that were just so much fun for me personally, and I think for readers too.
What a fun way to decide what to write next is to let the readers make that decision for you and then challenge yourself to write what they picked. I love this idea. Yeah. I love that.
It was really surprising. I continue to be amazed by it. And it, like you said, it's a challenge to take that general idea and then make something totally new and different out of it. But it's a fun challenge for a creative mind. We writers, we get creativity in the strangest places sometimes.
So. Yes, for sure. I was kind of surprised, frankly, that the story is set in 1868 and the heroine is a doctor. What kind of research did you have to do on that? And was it, I'm assuming it was really unusual for there to be a female doctor at that time.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ashley T. Lee Podcast. Join me to hear the Bible read line by line and clearly explained. Listen to the Word of God in your car or home or work while it transforms your mind daily. Romans 12:2 says, "Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, which is good and acceptable and perfect." Knowing the Bible can give you peace and joy in this hectic world. Listen weekly to Ashley T. Lee Podcast on all podcast sites.
Yeah, so I've written a number of different stories where physicians are either one of the main characters or one of the main characters is the son or daughter of a physician. So I had done a lot of research already about the different types of doctors in that time period and what the training would have been. So in this case, Dinah and her sister Naomi, they're twins, but Dinah's the firstborn of the two, and very much has that firstborn mentality. But anyway, so she and her sister were basically raised by their grandparents, their Nana and Pop, who that's what I call my grandparents. Mm. So that was fun just giving them the same name. But her grandfather was a doctor in their small town. They lived in a small town outside of Richmond. And she just, from early on, I think it was 5 or 6 years old, worked at her grandfather's side in the clinic and just absorbed all the knowledge she could get. She was definitely a learner, book learning, but really just had a talent for healing, but for getting on someone's level and seeing kind of the deeper need. And that is just a gift God gave her. And she just has the desire to help people heal. And so she trained at her grandfather's side. And of course, 1868, the Civil War had just finished, ended in 1865, but really didn't feel like it ended until years right. later. So her grandfather had been called away to be a doctor in some of the army camps. And while he was gone, she took over his clinic there in their small town. And that's definitely a scenario that played out. There was just such a need for medical care during that time. All the trained doctors were called to the soldiers, and that left the people in the towns seeking care from midwives and the people who were too old to go to the war camps. And so it was very reasonable that a young woman who had been trained, spent many, many years in apprenticeship, that she would become a physician for the town. Because especially in America, many doctors weren't trained at universities. They just had an apprenticeship, which seems shocking to us now, but there just weren't as many medical advances. And there were certainly specialists that would need to go to colleges and study, but there was a lot more self-study back then, and it was acceptable. So it definitely kind of differed depending on which parts of the country you were in. but in a small town, that would have absolutely happened during the Civil War time period, especially. So when her grandfather came back, he kind of took over his practice. Of course, the two of them worked together, but she was really kind of feeling the need to, you know, this is, he doesn't need me here. And when her sister found herself in need of a husband, for a reason the readers will find out in the book, Dinah just really felt God leading them to respond to this mail order bride. It was just a firm direction from God. And of course, when she gets there and realizes, oh, this isn't working out the way we thought, she questions that direction. God, what did I hear you wrong? What did I do wrong here? How many of us can imagine or remember times we've questioned God's direction?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that sounds really interesting. And that explanation makes a lot of sense about the female doctors. I never thought of it that way before, but it makes total 100% sense.
And of course, when she went west, she experienced a whole different environment in, you know, a lot of men who are, you know, kind of rough and tough men who aren't really wanting to let a woman do anything on them except maybe sew up a gash or something because women are good for sewing. But they're also out in the west, there were very few doctors, very few anyone who could even sew up a wound. So when they got desperate, they were perfectly fine to have her fix whatever broken arm or gash from a bear's claw or whatever the case might be.
Now, you write these beautiful, wonderful romances. That's what you're known for. They're sweet and they're clean. But I read one review that said there's definitely electricity in the book. So how do you walk that line between sweet and clean and electricity?
Oh, that's hard. So, you know, God created male and female, and he created emotions, and he created love, and he created chemistry. Like, he created these physical attractions, and he created a way for them to occur within his plan. And so the physical attraction isn't necessarily wrong, as long as we're walking in God's plan with, you know, is this the person that he wants me to be spending time with, etc. So, you know, fiction, well, I won't say it completely mirrors real life, because many times I've shared that real life is totally crazier than fiction. Yes. A lot of times. But our fictional characters, I feel like they're real. In my mind, they're real. Like, her, Dinah's background is absolutely real in my mind. Like, she's a real person who lived and breathed. Not really, but anyway, so as I write her story and her attraction to Jericho and how she fights it and how she realizes partway through the story that, you know, she was kind of maybe even flirting a little. Of course, she didn't use that word. And she hadn't even asked God, you know, is this someone you want me to even open these thoughts to? So she doesn't always do the right thing, but she has a heart that wants to honor God. And Jericho is just kind of, he's done with God. He's, the times he cried out to God for help, he felt like God just turned his back on him. So Jericho turned his back on God. And so in his mind, there's not as, he definitely has morals, and he definitely is very protective of Dinah and her reputation and just her as a person. He won't let himself cross a line with her because he respects her, but he's really pushed down his conscience in, you know, is this a situation that God wants me to be in, kind of thing. So of course, by the end of the story, that's changed, but I really just try to let my stories reflect the characters in who they are, while still, you know, there's some things that, some ways that an author can ramp up kind of that electricity and chemistry without getting real sensual, but, you know, focusing on the emotional response. And I think a lot of Christian fiction authors do that really well, because there is so much emotion in our physical, you know, touch and interactions. And it's really the emotional response that our readers connect with anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely an interesting line, but that's, those are my two approaches, my two thoughts on it.
It works really, really well. So I appreciate that a lot about you and about your writing.
I'll just say one more thing. My kids, I have four girls. My oldest is 16, but the others are 11 and 7 and 2, almost 2. So My kids don't read my books right now, mostly because I think they think it would be weird to be that deep in mom's head. But my mom does read all my books. She's actually my first reader because she's very much my target reader. Mm-hmm. She loves historical romance, especially Western type, and she's a great mom. And so I know that my mom's going to read everything. And so that just, there's that added layer. Right.
And when your girls do get old enough to read your books, you want them to be able to read them and not be embarrassed by them either. So,
yes, exactly. I want to be able to look at them in the eye later,
right.
And not blush.
Yes. I was on your website kind of looking around there, and it caught my eye, this book that you wrote in fifth grade. It was really cool. I mean, you had like a title page and you had the whole author bio and everything like that. It was so cool. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, I had completely forgotten about that until my mom, I don't know if she forgot about it and found it or if she had planned all along at some point to pull it out. But we were actually celebrating. One of my books hit the USA Today bestseller list. And so to celebrate, I wanted to have kind of my extended family, my parents and my grandparents and one of my brothers and his family, you know, just like all sit down together to eat, just because my family is such a big part of everything I do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so to that, she brought that book. She had it wrapped in a gift bag. And I had completely forgotten about it. It was, I think, it initiated as a school project. So we were homeschooled. And I think the general project was publish a book, write and publish a book. And so my older brother and I both did that. He is 18 months older than I am. And we actually were in the same grade because it was just easier for my mom. And we just did everything together. Mm-hmm. So she started me when he started. And so it was really funny to see the different books that we wrote. Mine was a collection of short stories. I think maybe three short stories. And they were all like Western or horsey stories. One was kind of a Laura Ingalls Wilder type story, and one about a bear, and one about a horse that ate its hat. And I think the books were supposed to be illustrated, either that or I just took it to that level. But I remember drawing the pictures for it and all the different names of the characters and names of the stories. And we found a way to hand stitch the binding. So if I remember right, we used fabric. We fabric wrapped the cardboard for the book itself, and then we hand stitched the pages in. And then I created a dust jacket that I laminated with some kind of like prehistoric lamination. I don't know. It's been several years ago. And I remember I did a front cover and a back cover. And of course, it had the dust jacket flaps. So there was the author bio on one. And I don't remember what it was on the other. But yes, it was such a big production. And I think I just, you know, took this project and took it way farther than it was originally planned to go. But my mom just let me go with it. But one other kind of really interesting thing was, like I said, my brother did a project similar, but his was totally representative of his personality as well. So his was a nonfiction book about the plight of the Mustang horse. He had, at that point, he owned several horses that he had, you know, saved up the money and purchased, and he wanted to breed horses and he wanted to rescue a Mustang, and he'd done all kinds of research on them. So he had all these pictures that he had printed out that he included in his book, and he had just the history of the Mustang and how you rescue one and how you train it and the things you need to watch out for. And just, it's really neat to have both of those because they really do represent what we've each come to become in our older years. He's a rancher / farmer. He runs some turkey farms and he has cattle, and his kids have goats and chickens, and you know, they just do all that kind of thing. So it's fun. That's a neat memory.
That is a great story. I absolutely love it. And listeners, in the show notes, there will be a link to Misty's website. I highly encourage you to go check that book out. It's awesome. Absolutely awesome. Now, as I mentioned, this is the first book in a new series, so I know there's something coming up next, and you hinted a little bit at it, but can you tell us a little more about the next book?
Yes. So I'm actually going to tell one other thing that is not very widely known. Probably by the time this podcast airs, it will be. But so I had planned for book two in the series to be Protecting the Mountain Man's Treasure, which is Jude's story, the third brother in line. And that is coming. That'll come in early 2024. Can't believe we're talking about 2024.
I know.
But I ended up doing a Christmas novella collection with Jody Headland and Lacey Williams that is going to release at the end of September 2023. And my novella in that collection is going to be a book that's going to slide into this series. And it's not one of the Coulter brothers, but the hero is their good, good friend who's like a brother to them, Two Stones, who is a Salish brave, who's Mr. Coulter, Dat Coulter, they call him, led Two Stones to the Lord early in his friendship with them in his teen years. And so Two Stones is really a neat, neat character that I fell in love with as I was writing this book one. And so when I was trying to figure out who my characters were going to be for this novella, for the Christmas collection, I just kept coming back to Two Stones and ended up asking Lacey, do you think it would be okay if my story actually fits in the current series? So readers can get that book, Christmas Bells and Wedding Bells is the name of it. I always get that backwards. Mm-hmm. And it releases September 25th, 2023. And Two Stone story will be there. And then it will later on release as an individual novella. And then they'll be ready for Jude's story in late winter or early spring.
Fabulous. That sounds great. So there's lots going on with you. If readers would like to keep up with you and connect with you, how can they go about doing that?
Oh, they definitely would want to sign up for my newsletter. I'm pretty active there. And that's definitely the way to know what's happening and get the first word on sales and early releases and just all the fun news. And they can do that at my website, mistymbeller.com. And actually, when people join my newsletter list, I give them a free ebook. Honors Mountain Promise is a novella in my Hearts of Montana series. So it's a great way to sample my writing and see if they like that style and see if they want more books set in the Rockies with these kind of mountain men characters and the strong heroines and just the really fun pioneer settings.
That sounds absolutely fabulous. Well, I can't begin to thank you enough for stopping by today and chatting with us about a terrific book, the beginning of a great new series. And we just are so appreciative of you and all that you do.
Oh, thank you, Liz. This was a lot of fun. I always enjoy getting the chance to catch up with you.
Well, that was a wonderful chat that we were able to have with Misty. Always so great to get to talk to her. And I know she's off busy writing, so please be sure to follow her so that you can keep up with all the books that she's putting out. You can find a link to her website and more information about Healing the Mountain Man's Heart and a link to get that book as well over on my website, liztolsma.com. All the show notes are going to be there with all the information that you need. So please head over there and check that out. Well, next week, I am just beyond thrilled because I finally got a chance to sit down again and talk to one of my favorite authors, and that is Jamie Jo Wright. She has a new book out called The Lost Boys of Barlow Theater. I am super excited about this book. I'm excited anytime Jamie releases anything, but this one sounds especially good. It sounds just classic Jamie. And so I know you're not going to want to miss that episode. So please be sure that you are subscribed to Christian Historical Fiction Talk and or you follow us on social media so that you know when that one goes out. I want to thank you for spending a little bit of your time this week with me and for sharing with others who love Christian Historical Fiction Talk about the podcast. I do appreciate each and every one of you. I hope you all have a fabulous week, and we'll see you next time.